Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Forest Park. We will be observing the park's 140th anniversary this Friday, just weeks after it was named best public park in the country. The park may be more popular today than ever and draws people to diverse attractions from the Muni to the Art Museum to the Science Center, the Zoo and the History Museum, of course, recreation opportunities. We acknowledge all of this today as we chat with Steven Schenkenberg, the Strategic Communications Director for Forest Park Forever, the park's caretaker organization. Steven, nice to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Don.
Hey, congratulations on the designations from USA Today and, what is it, Trillist as a magazine or online magazine?
Trillist, that's right. Yeah.
Anyway, best park in the country, not bad.
It was really exciting. You know, for USA Today, a group of kind of park experts around the country got together and nominated 10 or 20 of the best, and then readers from around the world kind of voted us up to number one. That was followed by this Thrillist, best city park in America. It feels like just a really great time when a lot of the country and in some parts of the world are recognizing what a gem we have here.
Well, what does it actually mean? I mean, it's nice, but...
Sure. So on one, it puts us on the national stage even more so. So I think getting more people to St. Louis as a place to stop, and the park as a place to stop and all its attractions. It also, when we see this on social media when this was happening, it just delivers these big pride injections to the community. And we saw it on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and people are sharing this with their relatives and friends around the country and saying, this is what we've got. And some expats, people that are still kind of following us on Facebook, let's say, that have moved away, they just couldn't be happier that to see some of the successes continue here.
And your boss, Leslie Hoforth, is continuing to beat the drum?
She is. So today she's actually in New York City. A couple months ago, the Central Park Conservancy, which is about 5 years older than Forest Park Forever, gave us a call and asked us to co-host a national forum on kind of urban best practices for parks. And we were delighted to do so. So we're up there with about maybe 7 or 8 conservancies from around the country that do similar work that we do. And it's a real honor to be helping lead this with Central Park Conservancy.
There's a lot we want to talk about, in as much as you've mentioned Central Park and New York City. I have a caller here who wants to get right to that, and then we'll move on to some other things.
Okay.
Alicia, go ahead. You are on the air.
Thank you. Is Forest Park really the largest urban park? Is it really, really large, larger than Central Park?
It is larger than Central Park by about 500 acres. So it's not the biggest in the country, but Central Park is about 850 acres or so. Forest Park is about 1,300. So it's indeed bigger.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the call. And that came through our Curious Lewis website opportunity for people, listeners, and people who go to the site to ask questions they're interested in about St. Louis. So that one is out of the way.
Got it.
It comes up every time, doesn't it?
It does, it does.
You know, Stephen, I think a lot of people take the park for granted in so many ways, but probably don't understand how it came into being in the first place. 140 years old, there must have been plenty of open spaces around the St. Louis area at that time. How did it develop?
So in about 1864 or so, the state of Missouri kind of put forward this idea of a central park for our region. This was an idea that kind of caught on. By about 1970, Hiram Leffingwell, who's still a name that's important to our organization, our leadership donor group is the Leffingwell Society, he kind of resurrected this idea and proposed this 3,000-acre park in St. Louis. As plans got more and more real, that number got to that 1,300 spot. And on June 24th, 1876, about 50,000 people came to Forest Park to officially kind of bring the park into being, to dedicate it. And there's that famous quote, at least within our organization, of, you know, this is for our children and our children's children forever. That's how this dedication ended. And when it was covered in the press, that it was the park itself was called indescribable in its loveliness.
And it remains that way to this very day. You know, a lot of foresight on the part of folks back in that time to
Absolutely.
Put that. And it was the time of the Great Divorce. I guess there was a little friction going on between St. Louis County and the city.
Possibly.
Your week is going to be culminated with an anniversary on Friday.
It is.
What special events are going to be involved in that?
So to mark this 140th anniversary, we actually started a social media initiative on January 1 of 2016. We created a Twitter handle called Forest Park 140, so at Forest Park 140. And just about every day since then, we've been posting 140-character-sized tweets about the park's history. So on this day, the Muni opened, and we'd have a photo or a little quote. Maybe the day the zoo had its first elephant, or the day the World's Fair Pavilion was officially completed, mm-hmm. or another part was restored. So that's been happening every day since January 1. This Friday is literally the 140th birthday. Out in front of the visitor center, between 10:30 and 11:30 a.m., we're going to be hosting a little concert by the 442s, which I know mm-hmm. have been on this program before.
Sure.
And they're part of our Artist in Residence program we could talk about separately. They're going to be performing that. And then Leslie Horforth, our president and executive director, and Greg Hayes, who's the director of Parks, Recreation, and Forestry for the city. Leslie and Greg are close partners here in the park. We're going to blow out some candles, hand out some free cupcakes. We'll have stickers for wishing everybody, asking everybody to wish the park a happy birthday. And then we'll have some of those stickers around the park at some institutions, too, so even if you don't make it there. And then lastly, we're going to invite anybody online to use the hashtag #HappyBDayForestPark, send a message, send a photo, and if you want to send the park a birthday gift, let's say a donation of some kind, that can be done through our organization as well.
Ooh, let's not miss this opportunity for something like that.
We would not.
You expect a lot of people, a big crowd in the park that day?
Well, the 50,000 from 140 years ago was one thing. This is kind of a modest-sized mile marker. I think for us, we love the chance to bring the 442s and this artist in residence in front of people, have Greg and Leslie officially mark this. We don't anticipate everybody in the community being able to be there at 10:30 on a Friday, but we'd love to see people stop by.
Since you brought it up, let's talk a little bit about the artist in residence program. What is that all about? How does that work?
So late last year, our organization was thinking about 2016 marks our 30th anniversary as a nonprofit conservancy. So we've been around for 3 decades. Our mission has changed a little bit and evolved in that initially we were much more of a fundraising organization, and we've really evolved into much more of a robust conservancy where we're partnering with the city to take care of the park. Rather than just come up with an initiative that kind of shined a light on us, we wanted to look at how do we have maybe a fun community program where artists who have long been inspired by the park can show us what the park means to them. So we did a call for artists across the country. We had a volunteer jury here in town of arts professionals. We had 117 applications from filmmakers, poets, dancers, choreographers, sculptors, photographers. The jury picked 3, and they are in the midst of doing a residency in the park where they ultimately produce a piece of new work that will be presented to the public.
Will they be performing inside, outside?
They will be. So the groups have been Work/Play, who is a husband-wife artist duo. Their residency is complete. They went around the park with our team, and they collected discarded botanicals. So let's say in front of the boathouse, the beautiful spring display was coming to an end, going to the compost pile, and before the summer display went up. They took a lot of these materials that were just going to be discarded. They're dyeing those, and then they're making a textile that they're going to present to the public with a little bit of a demonstration as well. And that is going to be on June 30th in the Visitor Center. The second group is the 442s, a classical music group that has classical musicians and jazz musicians. Mm-hmm. They're not just a classical group. They've been doing really fun pop-up performances isn't quite the right word because you show up, let's say, Don, on one of your walks through the park, you turn the bend and you just see a random bright green piano sitting under some trees by the visitor center. There is a member of the 442s right next to that piano who will accompany you if you want to sit down and hammer out some chopsticks.
That would not
be
a good idea, but
believe me, every skill level has sat down. And then they are ultimately going to kind of create a new piece of music that combines everything the visitors told them about their experience. And then they're going to be showing a video, a finished film, and the finished piece of music on September 29th. I just got to spend the weekend watching them do this, and it was just magical.
Right. And what a great weekend for it,
needless
to say. You talk about the whole process and the planning that evolving, Stephen. What are some of the things that are going on in the foreseeable future that are new?
Sure. So, you know, there's a couple of projects that come to mind that are not highly visible in that they're not super glamorous. They may have to do more with maintenance of the park, which is something that people don't maybe see on the front end, but if it's not done, they notice it. So, for instance, we have been working with our city partners and the city's water department to install modern new valves at five places where water inputs into the waterway. So the waterway goes all through the park, mm-hmm. and we want to improve the water conservation efforts so that when it's a heavy rain is predicted or it's raining, those know to turn off or to go lower because some rain's coming. And it's going to conserve probably about 5% water savings when that's complete. So nobody's going to see that. They may have seen some things being dug up recently. That's one thing. And then, you know, the summer and early fall are big times for the Art Hill area and the Grand Basin. So we've been working on repaving and actually rebuilding the paths that go all around the Grand Basin. Those are used by walkers, bikers, but utility trucks need to get in to set up for Fair St. Louis, for example.
I am in the park a lot, as you know, and very often people are asking me directions for one place or another. Actually, that's been improved a lot with various stations with
right.
maps and what have you.
Right.
But you now have audio tours, I understand?
We do. So you're right about that navigation. That used to be kind of one of the top pain points for visitors. And we had a new wayfinding system that was put in about a year and a half or so ago. And it's not just roads, but it's the path system. So it says it'll be a four-minute walk to the boathouse, let's say. So that's been helpful. And then we launched this forestparkmap.org, which is helping navigation too. On the audio tours, we looked at this one particular area of the park that kind of spans the park called the Nature Reserve System. This is about 180 acres out of the 1,300. And, for instance, Kennedy Woods, sort of in the shadow, you know, on that edge of the park across from the
southwest corner.
That's right, between the zoo and Skinker.
Yeah.
There's a savanna within Kennedy Woods. And then if you move east, the Deer Lake Savanna, which is north of the Muni a little bit. And these are tucked away kind of nature preserve areas that have been, in the case of the Deer Lake Savannah, that was created. So 15 years ago, that area was just turf. It was looked like Central Fields or Cricket Field. And that area over time has created this lovely kind of hidden away spot that's great for wildlife. It's a great place to see flora and fauna. And we have a nature reserve audio tour of each of those three locations. These have been narrated by John Pertzborn of Fox 2. Little 2-minute segments that there's a map involved that'll take you all around on a loop, and then you end up just learning a lot more about the area.
Well, you know, I think back to when I first came to St. Louis and what Forest Park was like. It was always a jewel, but it was a little shabby, a little shoddy. There were security issues. There were some incidents there. It's really changed so dramatically. It's really hard to comprehend how complete that's been.
It's been pretty amazing, and what has made it possible is not just the partnership that exists between the city, which owns the park, and Forest Park Forever, but the community's investment. I mean, that first big wave, the rebirth of the park happened after a $100 million campaign, and then we've moved into a point where we've got, you know, we have 7,000 members. They don't have to become members of Forest Park Forever. You're not going to get free entrance. Everybody gets free entrance. But people feel pretty good about saying, I'm going to invest $100 this year into keeping this park amazing.
Mm-hmm. And amazing it is. I'm one of your biggest fans, by the way, if folks haven't discerned that by now. We're talking with Stephen Schenkenberg. He's with Forest Park Forever, communications guy there. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Stephen Schenkenberg. Stephen, you had mentioned off the air that you've got something else going, a little audio tribute, I suppose you could call it, to the park.
It's fun. It's a little on the whimsical side. So we talked about the audio tours. Those are meant really for people to learn about this area of the park, these areas of the park. They can be listened to in the park. We expect to have people go to forestparkforever.org/audio and listen while they're walking, or they can listen at home on their desktop. For those folks that aren't able to be in the park, we wanted to do something for them. So maybe you're pulling an all-nighter at work, or you're flying across the country, you've moved. We launched a website last week called listenforestpark.org. And we sent a really neat local company called Hug Monster Sound out to five areas in the park, Picnic Island, Deer Lake Savannah, that prairie area with the boardwalk over near Steinberg Skating Rink, and a couple others. and did hour-long recordings of those sounds. You know those well from your walks.
Sure.
And we have them just embedded on this website. They can be played on any device. You know, let's say you're getting your infant to sleep, or you just need to zone out at work, put some headphones on, cue up the sounds of Forest Park, and I think your day is just going to be a little brighter.
What a terrific idea. That sounds great. I've got an email here from Rick who writes, I've been told by people who live in St. Louis that Forest Park is not a safe place to go. Is that true?
Oh, no, that's not true. So, I mean, 13 million visitors a year, that's an incredibly large number of people. Our offices are right there in the visitor center. You know, the moments of joy and activity that we see every single day from thousands of people, I would say, would contradict that. It has had a history where it's in a place, as you said, that it's just at an incredible place of a welcoming and a safe area for anybody, families, older folks, young kids.
You don't have to be there very long to see security folks, the park security people.
Yeah, park rangers.
Park rangers, either on horseback or in their cars.
That's
or
right.
just there. So
that's
that,
right.
That
yeah,
certainly
and,
helps.
And in recent years, that part has actually increased a little bit in strength. So there's now, and the St. Louis Police Department oversees, obviously, security in Forest Park. There is a dedicated sergeant to the park who is coming up with strategies to make sure the park continues to be a safe place to be. We've had a couple initiatives in recent years toward that effort. I don't know if you remember the old horse stables by Aviation Field. Those
sure.
reopened with a donation to Forest Park Forever. That has allowed for kind of a substation, police station to return to the park. There are more rangers. There's more officers on horseback. Better coordination between the city and us and all the institutions and safety, too.
You know, there's a question that comes up every time when Leslie was here a while back. It came up then. It's come up before. And that is that with all the facilities that are in the park, I mean, we've got tennis and we've got golf and you've got there's a cricket field there. And I see a lot of people playing soccer. People call and say, why is there no basketball facility?
Sure.
And what they're suggesting is it's designed to keep certain people out.
Yeah, that question was asked when Leslie was on. And the answer is a pretty simple one. In the mid-90s, when the Forest Park Master Plan was created, this is the guiding document that was created with a lot of community input. When that was created, it did not call for basketball courts. If anybody who's listening would like to make that recommendation to the City Parks Department, to the Forest Park Advisory Board, their meetings are every third Thursday or so every month, and any suggestions, recommendations can be made to that. So that's a listening body, but it's just not something that has been called for in the overall guiding plan.
Can you think of anything that the public have presented at such a meeting that actually was realized?
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe 5 years or so ago, there was an amenities study, which had a lot of community meetings and surveys. And a couple of the things that we learned there were people were getting lost all the time, even people who live here. And they wanted, as well they should, more restrooms open year-round and some more drinking fountains. So when we advanced and when we raised funds for those projects, that was directly tied to visitor requests. And so, you know, another thing we hear from visitors is what's the deal with the roads around the zoo? The government and Wells drives aren't in the best shape. They're exactly right. Those roads that's a project that we're fundraising for now and would like to see we'll see some major improvements going forward. So there's definitely a strong connection between what's heard and the improvements that are made.
What about challenges ahead? Can you, things come to mind that you folks are thinking about, talking about, worried about?
Sure. You know, we think about traffic a lot and connectivity and mobility within the park. So we started out the interview talking about how kind of celebrated the park has become, and we feel like there's definitely an uptick in visitors. That is something to celebrate. It does create its own new things to think about, which are when there's thousands of more cars coming in over the course of a month, or when this part of the park has gotten much more popular. How do you manage that so that everybody kind of still has a nice experience? So we're in the midst of a study that's around connectivity and mobility. This was, again, open to the entire community. Tell us how you get around the park now. What are some obstacles you have? What are some pain points? all that's going to be baked into recommendations going forward, with some real focus on biking and transit as well. So handling these large numbers of people so that everybody still has a great time, it's a good problem to have, but it's something that we think about.
I hear a complaint from time to time about bikers. They swoosh right on by, and some people are a little bit frightened by them because you can't hear them. Is this an issue?
Well, the point that we make when it's sometimes raised is that the path system was designed with kind of that gravel on yeah. one mm-hmm. one part and the asphalt on the other. Those are guidelines. So the guideline is the heels, someone's heels would be good on the gravel, and somebody's wheels would be good, whether it's a stroller or a wheelchair or a bike, would be better on the asphalt. There aren't restrictions around that. So on the signage that's around the path system, one of the big headlines is please share the path. So there's just not a way to say this is the bike track through the park. There are a lot of bikes that use it, but we just hope all the visitors can to the best of their abilities, share the path and keep the guidelines in mind.
We have an email here from Sarah who writes, are there any plans to expand parking in the park or providing a shuttle service from outside the park to specific locations inside?
It's a great question. I think the shuttle is one idea that's come up. I think one of the statistics that we have and that we say from time to time is that even on those busy weekends, so picture that really beautiful May weekend when Hampton is clogged and people are having trouble getting into the park, there's still about 55 or 60% of the total parking in the park is available. It's just in spots that people haven't ventured to. So there's a lot of focus on how close can people get to the zoo or the art museum. The Festival and Parking Plaza, which is the old Upper Muni lot, that area has 700 parking spaces. So we're hoping to educate folks, park there. If it's trolley season, take the trolley to wherever you're going. The ticket gets you on and off all day. We are, in that study I mentioned, we are thinking about how do we use both in the park and outside the park, whether it's the Metrolink station, which we already connect with outside the park. How do we use all of these possible tools to have a better experience?
My daughter lives in Dogtown, and she doesn't like the really nice days because she can't park on her street
sure.
because of the park traffic.
Yeah, we do. You know, make the suggestion to folks that there are several entrances to the park that don't. That aren't the word Hampton. So if people want to give a shot to one of the other entrances during their next trip, try a different route in. It's probably going to be almost guaranteed to be less busy and give it a shot.
Fair St. Louis right around the corner. Are mm-hmm. you ready for that?
Yeah, that's going to be another great event. You know, we say if it can't be downtown for the time being, there's no better place than Forest Park. The question we get asked sometimes with Fair St. Louis is how do the city and Forest Park Forever help those not have a negative impact on the park. So any large event like Fair St. Louis or the Balloon Glow, just like I had my wedding in the Jewel Box, you'd take out a permit and you have mm-hmm. a document that says I'm going to leave the grounds and the structure in as good a shape as when I got there or better. That happens with these big events to a much greater degree. So in January, the really great folks at Fair St. Louis started meeting again with the city and with Forest Park Forever to start planning about traffic, start planning about how do we minimize the impact to the grounds? So what routes can come in where the grounds of the park are not going to get damaged? How do we make sure the drainage is working on Art Hill so that it can rebound quickly? So those things are part of the plan.
This is probably the last one, wouldn't you think?
I'm not sure. I know yeah. we're focused on this one in 2016, and we'll await whatever news there is.
I have an email here from Kelly who asks, it's an interesting question, and you may not be able to answer it, but think about it for a moment. Could something like Forest Park actually be developed easily any place in this day and age?
Could someone replicate this
yeah,
model around
something
the
like this?
I don't
imagine what that would involve. That gives it a priceless quality, doesn't it?
It does. You know, you think about what it takes for something over 140 years to develop. It's hard yeah. to think about replicating that super quickly.
Yeah. What would you like to leave folks with today, Stephen? In terms of things we haven't talked about that is going to be happening in or around the park?
Well, I mean, the summer and early fall, it's a great time to be in the park. We mentioned the fair. You know, Shakespeare's back. The Muni's back. Lou Fest is going to be there. The Symphony has a concert on Art Hill. It's a place where all of that can happen. You know, you could be on the on Art Hill for a 10,000-person concert, and your cousin could be on the east side of the park having a quiet stroll or a picnic and just be in the most scenic spot ever. So what we like to remind people of is this is a park for all of us. We are privileged to be able to partner with the city to help care for it, and anyone who wants to kind of support that effort is just very, very welcome.
One of the most striking things I've ever seen in the park on Art Hill was the flags commemorating 9/11.
It is a very iconic site. Yeah.
One flag for every victim.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, it really was. Well, Steve Schenkenberg, thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure talking to you,
and thank you.
A pleasure being in your park.
Our park, that's right.
Forest Park.
Yes.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.